It seems you hear news of the national and state unemployment rates on an almost daily basis. The rate is up, or it's down, or it's flat. And as a result, most people are well aware that right now our national unemployment rate is floating around 8%. And in Wisconsin, the rate is lower at about 7%. But there's a subgroup of our population facing an unemployment rate nearly double that, and you hear almost nothing about it. I'm talking about people with disabilities, and their latest unemployment figures shows them at 13% unemployment, and their labor force participation rate is 21%, and that's compared to 69% labor participation rate for those without a disability. So this hour, we'll talk about the numbers, the issues, and the challenges faced by people with disabilities and the organizations advocating for them. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side. And now joining me in studio for this program are some local advocates from Western Wisconsin. First, I'd like to introduce Marlene Strom. Marlene is a business coordinator with Regional Enterprises for Adults and Children based in Eau Claire. Marlene Strom, thank you so much for joining us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Our pleasure. And next, I'd like to introduce Tim Sheehan, and he is the executive director of the Center for Independent Living for Western Wisconsin. He's based in Menominee. And Tim, thank you so much for being here.
Good evening.
And last but not least, I'd like to introduce Kyle Kleist. And Kyle is a senior lecturer and undergraduate program director for the Vocational Rehabilitation Program at UW-Stout. I hope I got that right. Kyle Kleist, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, I want you all to be part of this program and part of this conversation as well. If you or someone you know has a disability of any type and would like to share a story about the challenges of finding work or keeping a job or just challenges in general faced by this group, give us a call. The number is 800-228-5615. Now, before we get into any calls or any of the details, I want to get kind of abstract about this. And before we get into why this unemployment rate is where it's at, I'd like to talk about disability itself, mainly a definition. And Marlene Strom, along with Tim and Kyle, I'd like to try to get your different takes on what that, you know, it's an umbrella term that a whole lot of things fall under. And Marlene, first, you.
Well, the Regional Enterprises for Adults and Children, through their supported employment programs, we typically deal with people with disabilities that are receiving Medicaid or some kind of services from the departments of social services and that kind of thing. And the people that we typically serve are those that have physical disabilities, cognitive disabilities, and many of them have secondary diagnoses of mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And so our job is to help these individuals who want to go back to work or want to enter the workforce for the first time to be able to provide them the services through an employment specialist and on-site job coach in the different businesses. So that's typically who we work with. But we also started several years ago a supported self-employment program as another option for individuals who have difficulty working in the traditional workforce to have a way to be able to become self-supporting as well through a self-employment business, a supportive employment business.
Tim Sheehan.
Yeah, Rich, I think for the discussion, I think it's important to put the word disability into a social context.
Okay.
You know, and when we work in that field, and Centers for Independent Living work with all people of all ages, of all disabilities, when we talk about disability, we're talking about a permanent physical or mental impairment that affects one or more major life activities, such as working, seeing, walking, talking, eating, all those sort of things. So when you cast the net that broadly in a diverse society as we have in this country, you know, you're talking about something approaching 20% of the total adult population of this country. And so when you're talking about the barriers to something that we all – most of us daily take for granted, which is the enterprise of work, you're talking about a very daunting challenge because every person represents a different kind of barrier that needs to be overcome.
And Kyle Kleist, would you like to add to that?
No, Tim's right. When we do look at the definition of disability, we need to look at, you know, not only the variety of disabilities, as she was stating, but, you know, also the impact that it has on the individual. So, you know, looking at it in that broad context, as Tim was stating.
Now, the U.S., our state in western Wisconsin, as I mentioned in the lead into the show, still climbing out of a terrible recession. We've got national unemployment, 8%, state rate, 7%, and we're all well aware of that because of constant media reporting. Now, Kyle Kleist, are those with disabilities that are facing unemployment rates that are almost double that? I mean, are they falling through the cracks, and why should we pay more attention to them or to this group?
Absolutely, they're falling through the cracks. I mean, you know, a lot of people with disabilities face a lot of barriers to access and employment in a variety of means. One of them simply could be things like transportation, especially in rural areas. You know, if an individual doesn't have access to affordable and accessible transportation, they're not going to have access to employment. So, you know, there's a lot of different barriers faced by people with disabilities. So it's not until we can really overcome a lot of the barriers that people with disabilities face when accessing employment and, I guess, really make the public more knowledgeable about what those barriers are, try to foster more acceptance in.
Now, what about, you know, there's stigmas out there. And Tim Sheehan, I'll also get to Marlene and Kyle as well. But, you know, there's even a stigma that someone that takes disability might be scamming or they might, you know, they might not really need it. How did that come about?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we look at unemployment among the community of people with disabilities, and you cited the statistics from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, mm-hmm. and then you cited the participation rate of the general population, 21 versus 69%. You know, there's a vast majority of people with disabilities who never enter the labor force. And one of the reasons is, you know, what needs to change in this country, and it's going to take a long time, and as someone immersed in the disability rights movement, this is a big part of what we do. It would be really nice to begin to engage with employers in talking about hiring people, qualified people with disabilities, when the first thing that they thought was not what can't this person do, but how can they perform the job and what's my role in making sure that they can perform the job. One of the biggest barriers that exist is the social attitudinal barrier about people with disabilities in general, that we are somehow, as a person with a disability myself, that we are somehow less than we are somehow less than whole as a person, that we're somehow broken and need to be fixed, when our view is it's society that needs to be fixed. And the attitudes around the capabilities of people with disabilities to perform any job, even the toughest jobs, you know, there remains a persistent stigmatization of people can't do things. And as we begin to address that, I think, you know, that unemployment rate will shrink.
Marlene Strom, I mean, is that being addressed more than it has been? I mean, I look at things like the Bureau of Labor Statistics only began tracking this in June of 2008, the unemployment rate among people with disabilities. Right. I mean, what does that say about our attitude?
Well, that was a whole time when people with disabilities weren't expected to do something. And I think the other thing that comes up that we experience through our supported employment services is that the more disabled, a cognitive disability is almost worse because people are afraid. I mean, I don't know. We have to go out and talk to businesses every day. Our staff do, and we do. And one of the things that happens is that there's a concern. Something bad will happen. They can't be as productive, and they can't do things, you know. And I think that's – and it's kind of they over there. One of the things that I do as part of our services is I go into businesses and do sensitivity training and give them an idea about what can happen and what can – so that they can feel what it's like to have some kind of a disability or that kind of thing, but also to explain to them that there is ways for individuals to be just as productive as their employee who doesn't have a disability.
Kyle Kleist.
Well, I was just going to take off what you said. You know, personally, being a person as a person with a disability, as Tim, I don't think our media does such a wonderful job of portraying people with disabilities in a positive aspect, where an employer is going to take and break that stereotype, as Tim was talking about, and not look at what the person can do, but why they can simply do a job. So,
and I'm just, as a member of the media, my gut reaction is to defend. But what examples? I mean, what do you mean?
You know, when I look at examples, a lot of it is our mainstream media, films especially, you know, portraying people with, especially with psychiatric disabilities in a poor light. And so, I mean, that becomes a pervasive stereotype if people see that repeatedly over and over, especially in our visual media, so to speak, or especially people with cognitive disabilities, you know, being portrayed as age inappropriate in many ways, not looking at their abilities, but more focusing on their inabilities or potential danger in some cases.
One example I can cite, when we first started Project Search over in Menominee at the Walmart Distribution Center, one of the things that happened when some of the students were being suggested to come in, they applied to be able to be in that internship program there, and how even the teachers that suggest, and they were quiet, well, they won't ever be able to do the job there. They might not be able to do it. And how surprised they were that those students who got a chance to intern, even with their cognitive disability or with some of the other issues they may have had, that they were just as competitive as the people that were there. And subsequently, they are very, very hireable because they have the skills at other warehouses, in other retail stores, all that kind of thing. And that really, for some even educators, really woke them up and said, my goodness, we misread this. We didn't think they'd be able to do it. And so I think, like you say, it's pervasive. I think all of us here experience that pervasiveness.
So is that a form of discrimination?
Yeah, I would say so. Personally, you know, and I personally don't have a disability, but often when I go and speak, I think we all do. You know, I look like I don't have a disability, you know, because I don't show it. But at the same time, I always tell every time I open up a speech, we all have a disability of some sort. It's just not always recognized.
Kyle Kleist?
Well, I just wanted to make a quick comment because what you were talking about, I had the opportunity to meet with a student today that's about to graduate from our program who early on when she's getting ready to leave school and had been in some remedial classes was literally told by a guidance counselor who'd done a very limited vocational assessment that you're going to be flipping burgers. And so she was able to overcome that his assessment of her abilities and say, no, I know I can do more than that. So, and to see that within our school system kind of troubles me. And that was a while ago, but hopefully things are changing to the better.
Now, Tim Sheehan, I mean, Kyle mentioned the media and jerks like this person that told this student that she'd be flipping burgers. But is it, I mean, what's the responsibility of the everybody. I mean, everybody as individuals, what can they do to try to change that attitude?
Well, and I would agree with Marlene, what you were talking about is a form of discrimination. Discrimination comes in all different kinds of flavors. You know, we fought really hard going to be 25 years ago, pretty soon, to get our civil rights with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And you know, we have laws against architectural barriers and such, but overt and covert discrimination comes in the form of, you know, what's inside the hearts and minds of people who don't live their lives with disabilities. What, you know, one of the things that we do as a Center for Independent Living, populated mostly by people with disabilities and serving all different kinds of people with disabilities, is really assist people with disabilities in finding their own voice and articulating their own dreams for their lives and having the courage to express those dreams and then to make progress towards achieving those dreams, including all outcomes, one of which is failure. Failure is just another outcome. Once you begin to experience that broader world that, you know, I can challenge myself, I can rise above the expectation of my teachers or my parents or my peers or my colleagues, and then you begin your world begins to widen out. And so we really look at and focus a lot on the personal responsibility as a citizen with a disability to define ourselves in a way in which society cannot deny us. And, you know, that's a real challenge, especially for young people who come through the K-12 system as a young person with a disability. They get so inculcated into that institutional mindset of people doing for and in an entitlement environment. They emerge into the adult world where there are no entitlements and you rise or fail on your own accomplishments without proper supports underneath them. And that's why you see the participation rate in the labor force so low.
Entitlements. I will get to that and speak a little bit more about that and how it might even be hindering, as you're alluding to. But first, we're going to take a caller, our first caller of the evening, and a reminder to the other folks that are listening and would like to get in on this conversation. The number is 800-228-5615, and we're talking about the unemployment rate among people with disabilities, the challenges they face, and what can be done or what needs to be done to bring more of them into the workplace. 800-228-5615. Right now we go to Eau Claire, and we've got Melissa on the line. And Melissa, thank you so much for calling in, and what's on your mind?
Okay. It's not easy. For anybody to find a job, but double that when you have a physical disability or a cognitive disability, you're working against. You have all these limitations. You have all these limitations working against you, and then trying to get people to see that you're a productive member of society. It's not always easy. So I'm working with SES Supported Employment to help me try to find a job that's within my field.
And what type of field would you like to work in, Melissa?
Something within my degree, because I have a degree in marketing.
Oh, very good. And have you had any offers as of yet, or are you still looking?
I did have an experience, but that didn't go so well. But I'm moving forward with supported employment, and we're looking at other businesses and whatever. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's very frustrating when you have all these limitations. Because I'm serious. When I like look at jobs online and read the qualifications, either they need lots of experience, which I don't have a whole lot of experience, or education, because most of the jobs either you need a bachelor's degree or something higher than what I've got. And then when you put that all together with your physical, with my physical limitations, or people that have cognitive disabilities, it feels like you're batting zero.
Hmm. Marlene Strom, it sounds like this is somebody that you work with and know. And
yeah, she's in our program. She's been working. She had a job before, but due to the economy, she got laid off too, you know. So she became somebody who became unemployed again. And I think this is what she says about having an education, having, you know, but not being able to get the experience. This is very frustrating to these young people or people, individuals, because they try so hard. They got through school and they got as far as they could go. But then the job market, very difficult. And that's why we have to work, you know, so closely with the business community. And, you know, and it's a constant education. It really is, to talk to the individual businesses. We're very fortunate. We have a lot of locations where people are hired and that kind of thing. But she's not the only one. We have several who have these degrees and are very talented, but they have the barriers. And how do we adapt for them to still be able to be productive is always the other question. And, you know, and getting people to think, you know, if they're a graphic artist, do they have to do it all at here? Can they go home and do it remotely? I mean, there's all kinds of things that they can do. And those are ideas that we try to come up with and try to work with so that they can do these kinds of things.
Now, Melissa, since we've still got you on the phone, if you know, say there's some employers out there listening right now, if you could tell them one thing about yourself, you know, that would one thing to make sure that they would look beyond what disability you may have, what would it be?
Well, I'm creative. I try to think out of the box.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you heard it, folks. And Melissa, best of luck in your search for employment. And anything else you'd like to add?
No. The most important thing for people with disabilities to remember, and people that don't have disabilities, just because we're in a chair or we can't think the way that the so-called normal population, doesn't mean we don't have talents or we don't have desires. We don't have hopes and dreams of making success in this world.
All right. Wise words. And best of luck to you, Melissa. Thanks for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Okay.
Take care. And now we're going to go to Alex in Eau Claire. And Alex, you're on the line or on the air. Thanks for calling in to the West Side.
Hi. I am finishing up my undergraduate degree as a pre-service music educator. Mm-hmm. I'm in my last semester, and I am a student teaching, so I'm out in the field every day. And I just want to call and make a couple of points based on some of the comments from the guests earlier, the first of which being a question that you posed about whether or not a negative attitude surrounding people with disabilities was discrimination. And I think absolutely 100%. I don't think there's a hierarchy to oppression. So whether it's racism, sexism, ableism, oppression, I think has no bounds. And the second point I wanted to make regarding students with disabilities and how things have changed and kind of attitudes in our educational system. I think many teachers are not unwilling to welcome students with disabilities into the classroom, but what I find is many teachers, especially veteran teachers, are scared to approach the adaptations and to take control of their classroom in that way and their curriculum in that way and modify in the necessary means to make sure that students with disabilities are able in their classroom. So I think it takes a lot of courage for people, whether it be an employer or a teacher, to make that step to be more inclusive. And you know, and then I think the benefits society in general would reap from including students with disabilities in the integrated classroom setting, or just in general having a conversation about disabilities with our youth. And because, to your guest's point, the media is certainly not portraying a positive image, and students bring that with them into the school building and into their life outside of high school graduation. So,
all right, Alex, thank you so much for that. And Marlene Strom, you were nodding your head when Alex was talking about teachers being afraid.
Yeah, it was good to hear his perspective. One of the things that we have tried to do, they have an opportunity in this in Eau Claire called Career Venture, where kids from all over the region come for a day, and they're really looking for careers. And we changed our modality to where they were going to start experiencing again what it felt like to have a disability, to try to use your non-dominant hand, try to zip up a jacket sitting in a wheelchair and your legs don't move, and you know, a bunch of different things, and trying to make them with glasses and all that kind of thing. The interesting thing I had is, and I tell this story quite often, this young man was a football player. And he was really frustrated because when you ask them, how does that feel to you? The primary answer is always, I was so frustrated. I really got mad. I couldn't do what I was able to do. And this football player came back to our, he had tears in his eyes, and he said, I will never again think or do the kinds of things I've been doing to those students who have disabilities. And we began to really believe that if we could have that experience for kids in school, that they would begin to really feel to have more integration. We encouraged them, why aren't you inviting them to the prom or going to basketball games, to really see that they're just like you. And like I tell them many times, I said, they're very bright and they have more courage than the football player on the field. And it's been making a real difference, we've been hearing, and I think it's important.
With that, I hate to put a pause to it, but we're having a good conversation. We've got another caller on the line. We'll get to them in just a bit, but we have to take a break. We're talking about the unemployment rate among people with disabilities and the challenges they face, and just challenges our society faces in getting this group of people to be more included in society as a whole. Joining me is Tim Sheehan, Marlene Strom, and Kyle Kleist. We'll have more on the West Side when we return. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We're talking this hour about unemployment rates, and specifically the unemployment rate among people with disabilities. And that is a large term that covers a lot of ground, the term disability, and we're doing our best to get through it. Joining me in the studio, Tim Sheehan. He's the executive director for the Center for Independent Living for Western Wisconsin. Marlene Strom, she is the business coordinator for REACH in Eau Claire, the Regional Enterprises for Adults and Children. I apologize. And we've also got Kyle Kleist. He's the senior lecturer and undergraduate program director for the Vocational Rehabilitation Program at UW-Stone. If you've got a question or a comment on this subject, give us a call. We'd really love to hear from you. We've had a couple of great calls, great questions, great testimony. Join in. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. Now, again, before we start getting into the programs that you all offer through your organizations, I got a question, and this one will go to Kyle Kleist. I'm wondering if we're speaking about, you know, disability, and when people think disability, they have a certain picture. But are there any unique challenges for someone that might not have any obvious symptoms, like someone with some type of a mental disorder that isn't, you know, that I don't know, that she can't quite tell? Is there any unique challenges for them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a number of people with what we consider hidden disabilities that, I mean, it's just not a very visible disability in itself, creates somewhat of a stereotype because people, for one, you know, many times I've seen that they view it as a legitimacy, you know, even whether it's a person with mental illness, whether it's an individual, I mean, you know, with any kind of a heart condition, anything as similar as that. I mean, so you know, when you're talking on the side of employment, I mean, an employer may look at an individual and think of them, well, they look perfectly healthy to me. So, you know, the individual, I guess, really needs to, for one, have the acceptance that they do have a disability and then, you know, be able to get the employer to understand just what that disability is, how it impacts them, but how they're with any necessary or available accommodations can overcome that and do the job.
Now, and also, Mort running the phones, he passed a question to us about what kind of jobs, and I guess I'll go to Marlene for this. What kind of jobs are available for those with more severely cognitive, or for those more severely cognitively disabled? And I guess this is kind of falling into the whole idea of employment versus meaningful employment. And what's the difference there, Marlene?
Well, meaningful employment definitely is where we go. But one of the things, a way to help very severely cognitively disabled individuals, and it really depends on their level of acceptance and the amount of job coaching we can do to help them learn. Because it's amazing that, you know, somebody could look at somebody very significantly cognitively disabled and think they aren't going to be able to do anything but shred paper. Well, that's not a meaningful job anymore. My goodness, everybody's got a shredder at their desks, you know. They don't really need to do that. But there are opportunities that we can often customize a job for an individual. And we can work with the business and say, what kind of unmet need do you have that doesn't really get done because there's so many other things going on, and how can we have that thing done? You know, it could be as simple as making sure the in the production line that the boxes are opened all the time or whatever, and that kind of thing. And I think that's something that we often don't talk about. But I think the other thing that's amazing to me is that I've been in hospital settings where people have a terrible, you know, very difficult cognitive disability. Once they learned the task, they were probably more productive than the people next to them. And once they learn the task, but that's why we have job coaches to be able to help them learn, because they need that assistance, because then we can make it so that they can do it well. That, I think Jim has something too.
Yeah, you know, I think Mort's question really raises, I think, you know, where we're headed over the next decade or so. We really need to build and invest in new models for employment of people of all disabilities, especially the range of people with the most significant disabilities, either physical or cognitive. You know, in the past, when we've created programs for them to do with them, to have their days be meaningful, and we did it in congregate enclave settings. And you know, I think in order for it to be truly evolutionary and meaningful, we need to take them out of the enclave. That talks about the little bit of the fear that Alex was referencing, both the fear of the person with the disability, the fear of the parents, the fear of the professionals, the fear of the potential employers out there. And what we're missing right now is a flexible level of supports. Talk about job coaching, a level of job coaching that's long enough and paid for at a rate that is significant enough to allow that individual or team of individuals, a team around that individual, to really learn the task, to become a part of that structure, to become a part of that culture, so that they can be successful in that integrated employment setting. The other thing that I think we were talking earlier about, the discrimination aspect of the barrier of people with disabilities, the other part of it is the fear that employers have, general mainstream employers. I talked earlier about our success in achieving civil rights, including in the area of employment, both in Wisconsin law and in federal law. And many employers, when they're just talking candidly, and they're expressing their reluctance to hire a class of people with disabilities, they think if they hire the person with the disability, they're never going to be able to get rid of them, right? Mm-hmm. Or that they're going to have to bend over backwards or spend a bunch of money or have them do a substandard job, but still nonetheless employ them because they're a person with a disability. None of that happens to be true, either under law or in reality. And as an employer who hires mostly people with disabilities, I will tell you, if you don't perform the essential functions of the job, I don't care what your disability is, you know, you're going to get called in my office, and it's probably not going to be a very good outcome.
Mm-hmm. All right. I want to touch on that because there's something called an undue hardship in the ADA, and that I want to talk about in just a minute. But first, we've got a caller who's been on the line for quite a while, and we appreciate that. Anne in Birchwood, thanks for calling in. You're on the west side. You're on the air. Thanks.
I guess I'm coming from this from both angles. I have a degree in social work, and I have one of the hidden disabilities.
Mm.
Go ahead.
I was sorry to interrupt, but what kind of challenges specifically, like I just asked about the hidden disability, what kind of challenges do you find when you're searching for work or in the workplace if you're currently employed?
Well, like an example, the last place I was working at, I was going through a depressive episode, and that was still performing everything and doing everything, but anyways. And, you know, I told her I was working with my doctor, and we were, you know, because, you know, sometimes, you know, the changes in medications and things like that. And, you know, so especially where I live, there seems to be a lot of non-acceptance of mental disorders too.
Hmm.
I live in and I guess some of what is been difficult, you know, I have frequent job changes, just people not, I don't know. But right now I am unemployed. I am searching for unemployment. I'm searching for employment.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have a lot to offer. You know, and
have you enlisted the help of organizations like a Reach or like a SILS or the Vocab Rehab program at all, or are you just striking out on your own at this point?
Well, I'm applying for Social Security. In the meantime, I'm reaching out to a lot of different places. I used to work for a department. I used to do job coaching for people with disabilities. I used to work with children with disabilities, and was told I was did very well at it. And there are, you know, things that I enjoyed and I'm proud of, and that I know changed. And I felt like, you know, I don't know if it's because of my degree, but you know, I haven't really received any contacts of people that'll help.
Well, Marlene Strong,
would you like to chime
in?
Yeah, well, I think this is one of the real problems, you know, because it, like she says, you go through a med change and that impacts. You go through, if you happen to be a bipolar, if you happen to have these other different kinds of health issues. One of the reasons why we have a supported self-employment program is that for some of these people where it's so difficult to get a job within the employment workforce, that they often have skills that they can do self-employment, which allows more flexibility to some degree, and that they can do work remotely. They can do things like, for some people, they can't work a long time at the same project, but they can take the time during the day and still meet their deadline. Graphic artists, some of the artists, some of those different kinds of things. We haven't had somebody who was doing organizing in houses and stuff like that, or home cleaning or that kind of thing. So for some people, that's the other option, is to look at self-employment.
And I'm open to, you know, I see, you know, even though I'm in despair right now, I see, you know, many different successful possibilities, but I don't know, you know, I'm not meeting the people or making, I don't know.
Hmm. Well, Kyle Kleist.
Well, you know, and it goes back to, you know, what she was saying as an individual coming out of a program, having a degree and still not being able to access employment. I mean, see, nowadays we've seen not some cutbacks in vocational rehabilitation services, but more so people with disabilities having to incur financial loans and things like that to pay for their employment, which I'm not opposed to as long as there is an outcome at the end, which is a job. But I see students with disabilities, are persons with disabilities coming out of a program, receiving a degree, and still not being able to access employment, and then being burdened with all of those student loans on top of it when they're having limited financial resources as it is.
Yeah, that is it's a situation that so many people are facing right now, fresh out of school and really tough job market. But Ann, thank you so much for calling in. Keep at it, and best of luck to you. Really, thank you for your testimony or sharing your story. All right. And with that, we're going to take our final break here on the west side. We are getting close to the top of the hour, and we've got a lot of ground that we still need to cover. So stay tuned. We'll be right back in just a bit. You're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio Station 88.3 WHWC, Menominee Eau Claire. Joining me in the studio, we've got Tim Sheehan, Marlene Strom, and Kyle Kleist, all advocates for people with disabilities. And we're talking this hour, for the rest of the hour, that is, about the unemployment rate among people with disabilities. Right now, it's nationwide. It's 13%. That's almost double what it is for those without disabilities. And we're talking about why that is and the challenges, the special challenges faced by those that are in a tough economy and saddled with a disability of one sort or another. Had a lot of great calls, and we really appreciate people sharing their stories. The number, if you would like to get on this, 800-228-5615. The number again, 800-228-5615. We're getting close to the top of the hour, and so we'll only probably be able to take a couple more, but again, we appreciate it. Right now, I'll go to Kyle Kleist. We were just speaking about, we spoke a little bit about the employer's side of things, and I want to put ourselves in the boots of the employer. They're looking to produce a product or service as cheaply as possible to generate profit. But at the same time, you've got the Americans with Disability Act signed into law in 1990 that requires employers to provide a reasonable accommodation for those with disabilities, except unless it causes undue hardship. And I want to know what is an undue hardship. And I think there have been some court cases that have kind of bandied that about, but could you give it to us in a nutshell?
Well, Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, but it really comes down to a financial situation. So if an individual with a disability, say more significant disability, needed an accommodation that costs $50,000. This is a very small employer with limited income, so to speak. That in itself would create an undue hardship on that employer. But people have to keep in mind that when the average accommodation for a person with a disability employment, I believe, is less than $500, when employers might have that stereotype that accommodations are real costly, expensive. In most cases, they're not. It may be something as simple as a flexible schedule, but in many cases, if it is an accommodation needed, any kind of piece of AT or anything else like that, assistive technology, you know, this is reasonably cost, effective for the employer. It's not going to create an undue hardship for the majority of employers out there.
And Tim Sheehan, like I said, again, the model is to create, or the idea is to create as much profit as possible. I mean, how does that play into this undue hardship or this even $500, which isn't a lot of money?
Right. The reality is it plays in the way that employers view that. And they often wrap themselves around it in a way that they just can't move. So if you're a middle-sized industry, for example, and you have openings and you have a pool of candidates, and they all meet that screening criteria, and they get to the point of interview, and you have five candidates that you're considering offering a job to, and one of them shows up with a mobility device, otherwise qualified. The first thing that's going through your head as an employer is, what am I going to do? How can I do it? What's a reasonable accommodation? What's it going to cost me? And once I acknowledge that I've made that reasonable accommodation, can I ever get out of this deal if I want to? And so then oftentimes what happens is the offer is not made. The fact of the matter is Kyle's right about the average cost of reasonable accommodations across industries. The other set of facts that are hard to penetrate the general thinking is that people with disabilities tend to be more productive. They tend to be extremely loyal. They tend to be really hardworking. They may even go overboard on trying to be included in the culture of the company because they feel like, as Melissa said earlier, that they're coming in with deficits already because of the way they perceive people think about them. So, you know, what we find when we work with employers through our youth program in the summer, Youth in Transition, is once you can break through that sort of thinking barrier, then it all starts to fall into place. And undue hardship, as Kyle said, it really is. It's a hardship that would fundamentally alter the purpose of the business. If it's not that, you can't claim undue hardship.
All right. And now we've got like 5 minutes, and I want to get through some of the services that the organizations that you represent offer. And Tim Sheehan, what is the specific, kind of aim of SILS?
The Center for Independent Living really is a broad-based, we considered ourselves part of the disability rights movement. We believe that people with disabilities have a right, as in a fundamental civil right, to full participation in all aspects of society, and obviously that includes employment. So we do a number of things. We have certified work incentives benefit specialists on staff who work with people with disabilities who want to work, enter the workforce, but are on federal Social Security benefits and state supplemental security income benefits, and the impact of wages on their benefits, which is their access to health care. And so that's an important part of people with disabilities going back to work. We also offer various forms of programming to help people achieve their employment goals. So,
all right, and again, I apologize. It's like trying to fit a Bible in a pamphlet or something. I just made that up, and I'm not sure if it's very good. Marlene, tell us about REACH, and we've got a caller on the line that is participating in a newer program that you're offering, but what are some of the very basic things that REACH does?
Well, we serve 1,000 adults and children with disabilities, and we start from birth to 3 all the way up to retirement in a variety of different programs, including early childhood care. We also have adult day centers. We have vocational center to do some pre-vocational work, of course, supported employment. And our newest program is Victory Over Trauma, which is a collaboration with Trinity Equestrian, and which is serving veterans with post-traumatic stress, AODA problems, and those kinds of things.
All right, and now I'd like to welcome to the program, we've got Ray in Menominee, and Ray, I understand that you're a part of this new program that Marlene just mentioned.
Yes, I am.
All right, and
hi, good evening, everyone. Hi.
Good evening. Thanks for calling in, Ray. So, very quickly, how is this program, or have you begun working with the program? What was it again, Marlene? Victory Over Trauma.
Yes, I have. It's in coalition with Trinity Equestrian Center, and it's been an awesome experience. Marlene and my case manager, Betty, have just been over backwards, sometimes gone above and beyond. It's hard out there, with what I like to call a dual diagnosis, the post-traumatic and the AODA. It's very difficult to get back into society, if you will, and they help and make that much transformation much much easier, much better for me.
I'm glad to hear that you're getting getting the help that you deserve. And how about unemployment? Have you been able to get a job right now at this point, or are you still looking?
I'm still looking. It's not for, I don't think, a lack of effort.
Right.
I did have a call back for an interview in the upcoming week, but it seems pretty hard. You get online and you'll see the people, the employers wanting people immediately, but they continue to advertise for 3 or 4 weeks before you even hear back. So it gets a little frustrating.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And you're a veteran yourself, you said?
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for your service and best of luck. I wish you well. Thanks so much, Ray. And we had another caller that we're not going to be able to get to. Now, Kyle Kleist, I want to get into some of the basics of the vocational rehabilitation program at UW-Stout. What sort of things do you do there?
The vocational rehabilitation program, the undergraduate and both the graduate program, many of our students go into employment training programs, working with people with disabilities, working on the state or federal vocational rehabilitation programs. And, you know, I was just talking with Marlene before we came in, and a number of the employees there are former Stout graduates. And even Career Development Center, a number of the programs, you know, across even the Midwest area here are former graduates of our program. So we provide students with the education, training, skills, hands-on experience, working with individuals with disabilities, helping them to identify accommodations needed, skill training, those kind of things, as well as making them aware of what the laws are regarding persons with disabilities so they can help educate them so they won't face discrimination in the workplace.
All right. And again, I'm sorry to have you all have to push that out in such a short time, but I really appreciate it. Great conversation. Thanks to my guests, Kyle Kleist, Senior Lecturer and Undergraduate Program Director for the Vocational Rehabilitation Program at UW-Stout, Marlene Strom, Business Coordinator for REACH in Eau Claire, and Tim Sheehan, Executive Director for the SILS Center for Independent Living in Western Wisconsin in Menominee. Thank you both, all three of you so much. I'm obviously pressed for time. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Thanks for sharing your stories. It really made for a great program. Tune in next week. We're going to be talking about the Confluence Center in Eau Claire. I'm Rich Kramer. This is The West Side.